The show you're about to hear is a member of the Plains Talkers Podcast Network. To find out more, go to PlainsTalkersPodcast.com. Greetings, salutations, and welcome to the Plains Talkers Podcast, the show by casuals for casuals. I'm your host, Will Benson, joined as always by my, hey, it's been raining cats and dogs, but I'm more of a parrot person, co-host Aramis Bros. Aramis, sir, how are you tonight?
What are you talking about? Parrots suck.
I don't know. I had to come up with an animal, and I didn't want to say ferrets because they're just long rats, but let's get into... All right, before we begin, we want to remind you that this episode and every episode of the Plains Talkers Podcast is sponsored by Kerwin's Game Store. Kerwin's Game Store is New York State's premier source for collectible card games, tabletop games, miniatures, comic books, retro video games, and toys. With their clean, open gaming areas available to everyone at no charge, Kerwin's is 100% the absolute best place to go in gaming. They have an awesome retail presence. Their store is filled with very knowledgeable people. They have locations in both Catskill, New York, and in Poughkeepsie, New York, at the second floor of the Poughkeepsie Galleria. And you can find them also, if you can't get to the store, go to KGS Online. That's Kite Go Samuel. Well, it actually stands for Kerwin's Game Store. Online.com. And don't forget, you get 5% off your online order when you use the promo code PlainsTalkers at checkout. And if you go there in person, make sure you mention us, guys. It's always good. We also want to take a second to recognize our rare level patrons, Steve, Spencer, Chiba Tank, Nurse Gamer VJ, Bell, Josh, Jonathan, George, David, Anthony, and Dragon D's Nuts. Ding. We also want to go ahead and shout out our Mythic level patrons and thank you as well. That would be Jake, Jonathan, and Imagine Dragon the Sea Across Your Face. I'm loving it. Guys, keep it coming. You know what? Be a patron just to make weird names. I'm all for it. Make me say crazy stuff like, you know, mybeardsucks.com. I don't care. And if you want to, we also want to take a second to thank our producer level patrons. We got Jamie and Johnny. And Jamie wants to have a call with me probably on the way to work tomorrow. So, because he's 5 hours ahead of us. So we might have some, we're trying to figure out ways that he might be able to contribute to the show. Guys, we just want to say these people help us out in so many ways. All the patrons get, one of the major things they get is to play with us on our Wednesday Commander Craft. Now, we're already filled up for the first game because Grunt won last week. So we get to play Niv tomorrow. And I think Nurse Gamer VJ is going to play with us. So that's game one. Game two, I do believe we're going to have Kyle, who's a new player. And either the winner of game one or we'll have him roll. Or if somebody else wants to come in, man, I'll kick them both out. I don't care. So, let you guys know that we've got that going for Wednesday's Commander Craft. Listen, if you want to get in on the Patreon action, just go to patreon.com/planestalkers. And we want to remind you that Wednesday is our Commander Craft show. It's where we play listeners like you using webcams and four-person commander. So we're going to have a good time with that. I think I might try slivers one more time because I picked up a few new slivers. Like ones that make it hexproof.
You already have one that makes them shroud. So
yeah, there's Sliver Hivelord, though. He's amazing. So
that's indestructible.
Yeah, that's indestructible. I picked that up to you. So
fun.
We also want to take a second. It's nice to have this announcement back. We're proud to be the flagship podcast on the Planestalkers Network or podcast. It's kind of like a mini network. We just have a sister show. Cantrip Cartel is our sister show. They've launched this week. You can find them on Anchor at anchor.fm/Cantrip Cartel. And you can download them through most podcatchers. However, I don't believe they're on Apple iTunes yet. They still have to get that figured out, but I do know they're on Spotify. So Cantrip Cartel, check him out. It's Jake and Matt. It's a really good show. I liked it this week. We talked to them. So really good stuff. And finally, we want to remind you guys about our survey. We really do want your opinions. We do read through them. We're going to talk a little bit about it tonight if we have time. Just go to survey.plainstalkerspodcast.com. Leave us some comments about what's going on. We really want to know how we can improve the show. But before we get into any of that, we're still in untap, and I'm going to untap my unearthly triple dry hopped double IPA. So there you go. And Aramis, How the hell are you, my friend?
Drinking water, because there's plenty of that going around these days.
Oh, yeah, you got plenty of water. Hello, Mr. Cat.
Yep, so I'm doing good. You know, it was a busy weekend dodging raindrops. We had Tropical Storm Henry sort of make its presence
ornery.
Known. And
it's ornery.
Well, yeah, ornery. It was very ornery. It kind of parked itself over us for like the last day and a half.
Isn't
so
that
it's
nice?
Just it's been pouring for a couple of days. We probably got like 6 inches of rain. A little bit of localized flooding. Nothing terrible.
Jake.
It's been very moist.
Oh gosh, you know that's funny. That's one of those trigger words for some ladies. They do not like the moist word.
A lot of people don't like that word. It's just, you know, but it's so descriptive.
It is very descriptive.
Moist.
I on the other hand, like I had a weekend. Like Nicholas, the oldest, he was taken. We took him back to Oswego yesterday. So he's up at college. He's having a good time. We met his roommate, and I'm gonna tell you, I've never experienced this before. But it felt so much better to leave him with a roommate that, like, we could tell he's going to get along with. They have a bit in common. Plus, the kid's a music major, so that means Wendy and I had a lot in common with him. We got to tell him, like, how the department was when we were there. And it was really... We actually spent the whole day up there. We left here at, like, 6:30 yesterday and didn't get back to like, 5 last night. You know, but he's all settled in. He's doing really well. You know, I'm going to have to take him back next Sunday because his dad's getting married this weekend. So they're going to get him. And I'm like, look, you're getting married. I'll take the boy back to college Sunday. So get to make another trip to Oswego, but that's never a bad thing. Otherwise, it's been pretty much just hanging out and, you know, moving my office. And, you know, same as always. But are you guys going to do game commentary tonight? Not tonight, Jake. We are going to put that together. We do have some videos, Aramis. So you and I... We'll talk offline about trying to schedule. Maybe we'll try to do Friday night again or something. This cat really wants to come over here. Maybe we'll try to do a Friday night commentary because we have quite a few. In fact, I think we've got a lot of, like, could play this match and then this match and see the winners play each other. So I'm going to start putting the videos together. I'm having people send me everything they got. We'll talk about the Winnabox in the second main. I'll let you know where we're at. We're getting down to the wire on that, thank goodness. But let's go into upkeep and let's talk a little bit about what we're doing tonight. So tonight, it's a hodgepodge show. Listen, guys, tomorrow is the big reveal. Tomorrow is the start of spoiler season. It's the big, you know, here's what's coming for the next year. I think the arena update happens like tomorrow or Thursday. Like
it starts tomorrow.
It's
yeah.
A big day tomorrow. So obviously, since we record on Mondays, our show is going to be about, well, whatever the hell we can come up with. So, no, we're going to talk about State of Standard a little bit. There has been some changes. It is healthy, though. I really felt like I wanted to talk about that. Rosewater last Monday, we didn't get a chance to talk about it with all the special guests and stuff we had going on. But Rosewater released a State of Design 2021. So he kind of talks about why he did things he did, which, you know, good. Let's talk about that. And then we're going to go to main two. We have a Commander Craft segment where, remember, we're doing Commander Craft when we're, you know, pretty much out of topics. And we want to talk this week about staples you should have in every Commander deck. You know, and kind of go through some of that stuff. Most of it probably relatively cheap, but things you really should look out for, especially if you're new. It's kind of like Magic 101, but in Commander. And then we might touch a little bit on the survey. And then give you guys some Winnabox updates and the arena information. So that's kind of our show. And let's get right down to it. And I'm going to pet my cat.
Main phase.
Like I'm, you know, Vito Corleone. It's like, oh, tell me why you came to my house on the day of my daughter's wedding. Okay. So main one. So State of Standard. Standard, there has definitely been some movement. You were right. The code has kind of been figured out on Naya. Winota, again, is kind of fallen. He's tumbling.
Yeah, not surprised there.
Well, I think what happened is Mono Green, you know, and Dimir Rogues just, you know. But I've been having a bitch of a time with it this week. I kept getting...
They're all second fiddle to Sultai Control.
Oh, everything's second fiddle to Sultai Control. Sultai's taking up about 26% of the meta. Everything else is at 9, 9, 6, 4. You know, everything's kind of... It's kind of funny. Like, after the next two, which is 2 and 3 at 9.6, which is Dimir Rogues and Sacrifice, it all goes to, like, Mono Green Midrange at 6, 7, then everything else at about 4.8%. So they go everywhere. And again, he's just being demanding, this one. Hi. Hi, Mr. Cat. So it's a very interesting. What do you see, Aramis? Do you see any, like...
I mean, it's unfortunately that even though there's diversity in the meta, it's still the same song. When is rotation?
Yeah.
It's only a few weeks away.
Last year we had it easier.
Yeah, they kind of rotated us a little bit early, but it's the Sultai show. It's been the Sultai show for the last, what, 4 months, 5 months, pretty much all year. And it's just, other decks are moving around. I mean, Rogues are back. They went away for a brief period, but they're back in action. Mono Red's climbing again. It's a lot of the same decks that have been around.
Yeah.
The Nio and Oda deck was cool. It was awesome. It was fun to see it doing well. But like you said, you know, they figured it out, and it's now not hanging at the same level that it was before.
No.
We just need Eldraine and Ikoria and Theros to go away,
right?
And just let some of these other cards, you know, in these newer sets, let them actually do their thing. I mean, we'll actually touch on that a little bit in a few minutes here, but I mean, if this was earlier in standard season, Sultai Control will be looking probably at a ban, because 26% of the meta is not healthy. I mean, when one out of four of the decks in the format is this, and that's not good. That's overall, that's not good. The rest of the meta is pretty healthy. It's just the top deck is just dominating.
And I mean, what they'd hit is obviously the ultimatum. So
they'd hit the ultimatum. I don't know. Maybe they hit Yorion.
I don't think so. I think you'd hit the ultimatum. I don't think without the ultimatum, that deck shuts off. I mean, really, maybe Epiphany, but honestly, Epiphany outside of that deck isn't having the biggest impact. It's, you know, yeah.
I mean, this list that I'm looking at doesn't
even play.
That's
Dimir Control. Yeah, I clicked it too.
Yeah. So it's the weird thing about the MTG Goldfish is that it groups certain things together that don't actually fit. Because this is a Dimir Control list. This is not.
Yeah, I had to go hit the button to the left or to the right. I had to pick a different deck. Mm-hmm. So I hit the Standard League one. I think that took me to, Sultai.
Yeah. So it's just, it's the ultimatum. But yeah.
Confirm it's Emergent just, ultimatum disappears if they ban it. Yes. Good work, Jake.
I mean, it's gonna get nuked on rotation.
Yeah. Thank God.
Because half of this deck is going away. But it's kind of too bad in the one sense. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, just let's rotate. Come on. A few more weeks.
Get it over with.
Come on. Just pull off the Band-Aid.
I'd love to see it get canned so I can recoup some wild cards.
Yeah, you know, that would be nice. That would be nice. But unfortunately, since it's 1 month from today, I think, actually, is rotation. Let me see when the release date is. 24th, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, basically a month from today. 1 month from today, boys and girls. Standard finally rotates. And we can say goodbye to Throne of Eldraine and
minions. Eldraine's the biggest problem, I think, right now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the ultimatum's obviously from Ikoria.
Yeah.
But, Eldraine is just... It's head and shoulders above everything else right now.
Yeah. So the state of standard, I mean, it is nice to see Dimir kind of coming back up. A sacrifice deck, this sacrifice deck is looking pretty, other than Kroxa, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It's looking pretty, well, no, Wolfstrider and Rankle. Yeah, never mind.
Well, and then again, it's like, all right, it's a different flavor of it, but there was a sacrifice deck in standard not that long ago during this period of rotation, you know?
True.
And Mono Red's been here forever, and the Naya decks have been around, and it's just all of these decks have a lot of things in common, and a lot of that is they're based off of Eldraine strategies or Ikoria strategies or Theros strategies. Nothing here, there's no Landfall deck, there's no Party deck, there's no Magecraft deck.
Yeah.
You know, all these mechanics that are a lot of fun, they're... not the main focus of all of these decks. They're all either busted cards from Eldraine, busted cards from Ikoria, busted cards from Theros.
You see, so this is why I do this show with you. This is how good of a broadcaster you've become. You know what? And I'm going to undo what you just did, but I have to do it because it's amazing. What you did there was an awesome segue into our next segment because he talks about that and Rosewater talks about that. So, you know, you're not wrong. And it's kind of nice to see Rosewater talk about it. If you're wondering what we're talking about, it's the State of Design 2021 that he posted on magic.wizards.com. Rosewater put out his yearly State of Design. And don't get me wrong, he's been swimming in Mark Rosewater land for some time. He's like, you know, I treat it like the State of the Union. I'm like, okay. But he does talk about that. He's like, some of the lessons, you know, we need to get better at extending our mechanical themes between sets. He's like, while visiting more worlds per year helps keep Magic from feeling safe, we've run into the opposite problem. Players get excited about mechanical themes in individual sets and then feel that theme is abandoned as we move on to do new things in other settings. We need to get better at figuring out how to let each world shine on its own but come together to create something larger.
I can fix that real quick. Yeah. Blocks.
Yeah.
Go back to blocks, even if it's just two sets like they were.
That's what this is, though. I mean, think about it. Think about it. Innistrad has two... They're trying it again. They have to.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
You it would like feels to, like well, a test. You know,
we'll find out tomorrow. I mean, and here's the thing. Did you see Gavin Verhey's Good Morning Magic today?
No, I did not, because, you know, I didn't.
So,
what did it say?
We learned how to say hello in Phyrexian.
Oh, fuck.
And he was wearing a Jyn Gataxias t-shirt.
Oh, dear.
And he said, if we go back to Phyrexia sometime in the future, when and if that happens, it would be good to know, you know, how to write Phyrexian, what the language looks like, da 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 da. And it's like, oh, you know, we're totally tomorrow. They're going to reveal a Phyrexian set tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. He's doing the whole, like, you know, yeah.
The tease before the tease.
Yeah. And I'm good with that. You know, here's the thing. I like the fact that they do new stuff, like Eldraine and Ikoria and Strixhaven. Like, they go to these new realms and Kaldheim. And we'll talk about this in his letter. I mean, he does admit a few things. And by the way, he did say, too, that Throne of Eldraine being so strong didn't let any other set shine. But
yeah, no, that's the big monkey in the room. And I'm glad he addressed that. Throne of Eldraine strangled everything else.
It did. I mean, for 2 years, Eldraine... And again, I say this once-a-year rotation sucks, and it should be every set rotates. You have six... sets, and then boom, you're rotated, and we always just have six, and I think that is a far better way to do it. But I also don't work for Wizards, but I have a friend who does, and I should call her. But yeah, you're not wrong. I think us going to Phyrexia is a good thing. I think us going back to Kamigawa is a good thing. Innistrad is always fun because, you know, it's different than most of the other, you know, planes because it's based in horror, you know.
I like what they were doing after War of the Spark when they started visiting all these new worlds, you know, Eldraine, Ikoria, Strixhaven, Kaldheim, you know. Yeah, they went back to Theros, but and to Zendikar, but they went to all these different new worlds, and I thought that was great. That was awesome. It was kind of like a palate cleanser after this long arc had ended. But like he was saying, you know, we didn't really get a chance to really sink our teeth into the mechanics. I mean, like, you could have easily gotten away with having party in the Dungeons & Dragons set.
Right.
Or adventures in the Dungeons & Dragons set. You know, that it all fits in the theme of that world. And if the push the last year wasn't the MDFCs, which he admits that it didn't work the way they hoped it would, because it really wasn't as strung together as they could have been.
I think he wants them to go to mainly lands. He's. I think that's kind of one of the things he was saying about that was, you know.
Yeah, like mainly
lands were happy. Everybody was happy. I'm like, absolutely.
mainly lands are just make it so it makes a little more sense.
Yeah.
For the decisions that they make, I think the mechanic overall was a smashing success. I love the pathways. I love, you know, being able to have a powerful spell or even a tap land or a bolt land.
Right.
You know, if you need it, or even just having two different creatures or a creature and a planeswalker, having the options in the one card is really nice, and I like that. I feel like they do need to go back to a block setting. I do, or if they yes. don't go back to blocks per se, they need to have the mechanics make an appearance in a standard where, okay, time it so that the mechanics that rotate at the same time, they show up in only those sets. Right. So like, you know, like Eldraine, Ikoria, Theros, and Core 21 are rotating. All four of those sets could have had Mutate. All right. four of those sets could have had Adventures. All four of those sets could have had Devotion.
Right.
Things of that nature. You know, and that way you get to really dive into the mechanic, get a lot of things for the mechanic, and then they all go away at once, so you don't have a random card that cares about that stuff in another set.
Exactly. I would have liked to have seen... I think they did need to do that. Maybe not so much Adventures. Like, I think it should be... there needs to be a balance. I think that's what he's trying to say. In that, okay, if Adventures had been there for the whole year...
Well, part of the problem with Adventures, I will say this. I was only using that as an example. Adventures are too powerful.
Yeah, that's just it.
The way that they did them, they were too good. So they obviously need to tweak that. They should bring that mechanic back. I do like the mechanic. It's too strong.
But there are other mechanics that, you know, were not as well received as some of the ones lately. Like Exert would be one. I mean, it was a great idea. The execution, I thought, of Exertion during Hours and Amonkhet was. But it's an example of what you're talking about. They're taking a mechanic through, you know, two sets.
Well, I mean, look at Adamant.
Yeah.
Do you remember what that does?
No idea. Spend three, get to do something.
Well, you have to spend a certain amount of mana right. of the one color, and it does the thing.
Right.
But nobody really cares about that. I mean, Escape, if it wasn't for the Titans of Uro and Kroxa, would anybody have played any Escape cards?
Everything, I don't really know of any. Yeah, everything was shattered by Eldraine. I mean, there's no way
I mean, Landfall made a splash, but that was only because Omnath was ridiculous.
Yeah. And then when Omnath went away, Landfall went away, pretty much.
There you go. It's been Adventures. It's been Adventures and Companions. That's basically it.
Yep. And I think that once Eldraine goes out, I'm very excited to see kind of what takes its place. Now, Mill's going to be a deck. Ugh. Mill's going to be a pain-in-the-ass deck. It may go to number one.
Why do they do that?
I know.
I mean, even as somebody who plays blue, I don't like even when I play Mill myself, I don't feel good playing it. It's just, it feels like I, especially now since I've taken more of a casual turn, I don't care if you kill my stuff. I don't really even care as much if you counter it. But if I don't even get to try...
Right. If I have to watch it all go into the graveyard, but you don't have a card that lets you shuffle your graveyard back into your library, like at least the last time they had any mill mechanics, there was that one card in War of the Spark that was like, it lets you amass, and it shuffled your library back into your, like you needed it to kill the parishioners. That would let you shuffle your library back in your deck. Without a card like that, mill is a pain in the ass.
Hey, maybe they'll reprint the Eldrazi Titans. They shuffled if they went to your graveyard. No, we're not going back to Zendikar for a while.
Yeah.
They're all dead.
Well, again, getting back to this article, he talks about that. He's like, okay, one of the lessons was this set didn't bring back the things they wanted brought back for Zendikar Rising. And he's talking about, you know, the Eldrazi.
People miss the Eldrazi. And here's the thing. I understand why they weren't there. Right. I mean...
From this a lore after, perspective, yeah.
Yeah, everything's gone. They're all dead. Emrakul, they don't know where she went because the people on Zendikar don't know that she went to Innistrad and caused some problems.
You think we'll see Emrakul?
I don't think we'll see Emrakul in this set. Oh. I mean, she was in the moon. She put herself in there.
I don't think
they will. Like, but here's the thing. Like, with what they could have done with Zendikar Rising is they could have had a couple of the, you know, little random baby Eldrazi or just a couple other mentions of the Eldrazi. Right. The only card that was there was Forsaken Monument, and unless you knew that that was Ulamog's silhouette in the art, you wouldn't have known that was a card that talked about the Eldrazi.
Right. I mean, they could have just had the Eldrazi, like, little tokens that you create and be like, those are still running around because you created a billion of them, yeah.
There's a couple of them. But,
I think it's been confirmed, no Eldrazi. We know,
Jake. Because the only Eldrazi that would be there would be Emrakul and the other bullshit that she causes.
Right.
But that basically got taken care of when Tamio and Nissa stuck her in the moon.
Yes. But so, if only Crimson Dawn didn't deal with the moon. This is why I'm like, from a lore perspective, if they were going to bring Emrakul back, they could. Because we're dealing with the moon.
I'm thinking that putting her in the moon had negative consequences, because I think the whole thing of Midnight Hunt is that the nights are getting longer.
Oh, so they'll have to free her? She won't be in this set, she'll be in Crimson Vow. They're gonna have to free her. The vampires are going to have to free her.
It might be something completely different anyway, but because they're saying the nights are getting longer, the monsters are coming back. But not like Eldrazi monsters, the werewolves and stuff like that are coming back, and the humans are scared again. So there's this very big midsummer type thing going on. So a lot of hedonism and nihilism, end of the world type stuff. And
it's a party.
Then I know the Crimson Vow is about a wedding, and it looks like it's Soren and Olivia getting married. So I don't know.
Well, good. Soren Planeswalker is always fun.
We're gonna find out a lot of interesting stuff tomorrow. I'm kind of sad that our show's on Mondays and not Tuesdays, just for that fact. But we'll talk about it on Monday.
Here's the thing. I mean, I think I can make Tuesdays work if we ever had to. We could talk. I mean, not tomorrow, obviously, but
tomorrow's not gonna work.
We would make the change because it would be a programming change.
Yeah, 8 a.m. Pacific time, guys. Go
11
to the
a.m. our time. In the real
11
world.
A.m. on the East Coast. Go to Magic's Twitch channel, and then we'll see if they drop Phyrexia on us. I imagine they will. I mean, or at the very least, Dominaria.
There'll be a Kamigawa too. That's just it. Give me three out of the four being planes we've gone. No shit, they'd all be us. There's no new plane next. Oh, give me that. Fine, let's go to other places that we've been. Let's New Worlds, whatever.
Yeah, the last time we went to New Worlds, bad things happened.
Yes. Well, Ikoria, I mean, not really. It was...
Companions. Ultimatums.
Ultimatums. Well, Strixhaven's a new world, technically. So it's Kaldheim.
Strixhaven and Kaldheim are both new worlds.
Yeah.
Although Kaldheim had Borinclex.
Yeah. Well, he's talking... And that was just it. When getting back to kind of this, he's talking about... he does mention Kaldheim, and he admits... This is just it. This is why I think we will go back to blocks. Is because he's like, the set felt too cramped and should have been two sets.
Mm-hmm.
So they're already starting to see, I think, that we need to go to a semi-block. Especially if you're going to introduce new worlds.
Yeah, and here's a great case in point. To the listeners and to you, Will, how many of the 10 realms of Kaldheim can you name? And if the ones that you can name, what are their color identities?
Oh, I can definitely... All right, so it's United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, something Jamaica, Peru, South Dominican... Never mind.
Exactly. But that proves my point. I don't remember all of them. I mean...
I don't remember one of them.
There's Immersturm.
Don't remember.
There's... what's another one? That's it. I know if I looked at them again, I could get them, but...
Dude, Sternheim, but to I think be fair, one? I can't name the guilds in Strixhaven or the classrooms, the schools, whatever they're called.
Oh, the schools of Strixhaven? Yeah. Well, again, but there's the thing. It's like we spent 5 minutes there.
Yeah.
Although they did a great job with the schools. That was much more fleshed out. It was much more, and I think part of the reason is because it was five as opposed to 10.
Yeah.
But also too, a lot of people can name the guilds and the wedges and clans, but we spent a block on Tarkir. We spent a block on Alara. We've been back to Ravnica three times. So, of course, you're going to be able to name these things. And it'll be a little harder for Kaldheim and Strixhaven. But at the same time, it's like you spent 5 seconds. We need to spend more time in these worlds.
And again, because of Eldraine, you were overshadowed. If Completely. Rotation was a sixth set, Eldraine would have rotated out with Kaldheim. Eldraine would have been done. And we would have and Ikoria would have left with Strixhaven.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have solved the overall issue of trying to remember what these realms and stuff are.
But you play them a little bit more. Like, you end up playing more. The thing about it was that, and this is kind of, consider it the state of standard. Consider this our state of design, whatever you want to call it. The problem is that because of Eldraine, really what we saw from all of these sets since Eldraine is one, two, maybe three chase cards that impacted decks that were built around a mechanic of Eldraine. Whether it's Adventures, whether it's Embercleave, whether it's the Lovestruck Beast. The problem is that because of Kaldheim being what it is, other than Dimir Rogues, Rogues was kind of its own thing. I can't name another deck until now with Dragons that was not built on the spine of Eldraine. Mm-hmm. You know, and so yeah, that impacted all of these other sets. That's why I'm very excited to see post-rotation and see really, it's going to be like a chance for us to really see what Kaldheim, Strixhaven, and even AFR, and again, guys, dial back the AFR hate. It's a core set. Understand that. It's a core set.
It's not a core set, though.
I know. It is a core set in that the power level feels like a core set. Like, a core set, not 2020 or 2019. You know,
it's kind of like a Magic Origins type of thing.
Yeah, it has that power level feel to it. And again, I'm okay with that. I think those cards that are in AFR right now are going to be incredibly awesome support cards going forward. You know, obviously, Innistrad's going to take us tribal. I mean, there's almost, you know, if you look up, he also published an article with his original design intentions, his design notes for the original Innistrad. And in it, they talk about tribal. They talk about werewolves. They talk about zombies. They talk about vampires. You know, here's the thing. Innistrad, with these next two sets, I think you're going to see tribal be, you know, they're going to move towards that. It's almost an Ixalan level of tribal. You know, probably, werewolves and zombies, especially in the first one. So
yeah, werewolves and zombies and humans, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. And so that is going to play really well with AFR, that's going to play really well with Kaldheim, because Kaldheim still has gods. So, and the gods are somewhat fun.
Although Seek is dead, that sucks.
Yeah. She's lost but seeking, but now she's dead.
Now she's very dead. Yeah. Stupid Vorinclex.
I love Vorinclex. Leave him alone.
He killed her.
Yeah, but, you know, people die, man.
Yeah, but that still sucks. The Seek was a good character.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, yeah, it's just...
Kyle, guess, you're not wrong. I would have liked to have seen a core set.
Yeah, I would have rather seen core set 2022.
Yeah.
And, you know, make and have the Adventures of Forgotten Realms be like a supplemental set.
Well, that's what they're doing going forward. Rosewater's set. He came out and said on his podcast or in a tweet or something that, or it might have been on his blog talk, that moving forward, you know, Universes Beyond sets are not going to be standard legal.
I think part of the problem was that by the time they made that decision, AFR was already done.
Yeah.
And there was no way to change that. And that's fine.
I'm fine with Dungeons & Dragons. I think you should do it again. I think it should be standard legal. I think Wizards owns Dungeons & Dragons. The possibility for synergy is good. And in a world without Eldraine, I think we could have seen something amazing.
But the problem, one of the problems they were talking about, and it's true, is that it's hard to handle planeswalkers with Dungeons & Dragons because that follows a different set of rules, especially in the lore. It doesn't work the same way in the D&D worlds as it does in the Magic worlds.
Right.
It's easier to bounce between worlds in D&D than it is in Magic. Right. You know, you have spelljammers and things like that. So I think this was a fun experiment. I think it was successful. I'm glad that they're still deciding not to do this,
right.
Because if they had, I mean, it would have been, okay, Lord of the Rings could realistically be a standard legal set, or Warhammer 40K could have been
Pam.
A standard legal commander. Hey, babe. So I'm glad that they did this. I'm glad they made that decision. Keep the Universes Beyond separate so that, okay, yeah, there'll be eternal format legal, like right. You know, Legacy and Vintage and Commander. Okay, that gives you more design space. It gives you more flexibility. It allows you to ramp up the power level if that's what you want to do. But it also makes it so that you don't have to buy the set to keep up.
Right. And that's just it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, yesterday, I was in a Walmart in Oswego, and I'll admit it, I'm not blown away by AFR. So I was there, and I kind of, you go walking by the magic rack, because you're in Walmart, and that's what you do. And they had a whole bunch of Modern Horizon set boosters, MH2, and they had a whole bunch of AFR. Didn't touch AFR. Grabbed two Modern Horizons. Got another Cursed Totem, and I got another Scalding Tarns. I have a place that is Scalding Tarns now. You know? And again, because it's a better product. You know? Yeah. And I think they need to do that, too, is I think they need to think about, you know, we've talked about it 1,000 times. We're going to beat this dead horse until we're blue in the face. Get rid of the damn reserve list.
Yes, get rid of the reserve list. But, you know, also, too, sort of leading ahead into what may or may not be coming with Crimson Vow, there's rumors about box toppers.
Yes.
That needs to be in every set. There needs to be, okay, yes, it's chase cards, and we're running down that particular road. But we've already done that. And I don't know about you, but Strixhaven was a lot more exciting knowing that I could open a Demonic Tutor. The rest of the set was great anyway.
But well, those being were able just to open box toppers. Those were...
Yeah, those were just in packs.
Right.
And having the chance to open something ridiculous like that is great. I mean, it's a great... Doing something like the Mystical Archive, doing something like box toppers is a very good way to get around the reserve list without breaking the reserve list. So if there's a way... I mean, hell, they changed their own promise in the past. Because they used to print foil exclusive copies of certain cards that are on the reserve list, and they said, "Oh, okay, we won't even print them in foil." They changed their promise.
Right.
So they could change it again and say, "Okay, here's how it's going to work. These cards will be available as a box topper or as an expedition type of thing, where it's like, you know, there's a couple in a case. You might get one, like the old expeditions,
right?
Or masterpieces, and just that would drive sales of the sets through. I mean, they're already higher than they've been. They're already seeing record sales. D&D sold very well, as polarizing as it was. It sold really well. But just think about that. You go, you're cracking open a pack of Innistrad Crimson Vow,
and you open a Gaia's Cradle.
Well, not even a Gaia's Cradle. You open, you know, an alternate art foil Snapcaster Mage.
Yeah.
You know, it's something from Innistrad. You open alt art Liliana the Veil, maybe in the old frame. You know,
exactly
something. You know, because that would be cool, because they've never done Planeswalkers in the old frame. How would that look? How would it work? So, you know, there's all these different things, little treatments that they can do to get these cards in people's hands to where, okay, as a collector, they're still valuable, they're still expensive, but as someone who wants to play the game, they can spend $4, crack a pack, holy crap, there's my chase card. I needed a Liliana the Veil for my deck. I don't have to spend $100 or whatever she's worth now to get one. I just got her. So... You know, obviously buy singles, but
yeah.
There's things they can do, and AFR didn't really have that unless you were really super into D&D, and that, I think that's part of the reason why I think, even though it sold really well, I don't think it did as well as it could have, because there was nothing really there to draw you to say, you know what, let me just crack a few more packs. Yeah. This is just too much fun.
I mean, neither one of us bought a collector booster box.
Nope.
So I mean, right there. But believe me, if there's box toppers, I might be buying a collector booster box of Innistrad.
Midnight Hunt, I don't think. Midnight Hunt doesn't have them. Crimson Vow might. That's what the rumor is.
I heard Midnight Hunt's going to have them.
Midnight Hunt does not have, because they're available for pre-order now.
Oh, okay.
And there's no box topper. Crimson Vow, there was something up on the Wizards Amazon page that had box that mentioned box toppers. I don't know if it's still up.
Yeah.
But if Midnight Hunt doesn't have box toppers, I'm hoping they have some other gimmick, some other chase card. Like, you know, maybe they throw in original Innistrad cards in there. I'd be all over that.
Right.
Even maybe when they went back with when Emrakul was there.
Right.
You pull an Emrakul, the Promised End. That would be pretty cool.
Oh, I hope so. It's okay, Kyle. We're not, you know, you're still building your collection, buddy. What you need to do is, honestly, you need to start looking at, like, getting a long box of, like, commons, uncommons, and some rares, and, you know, just get crazy stuff. Because that's how I found a Rhystic Study. All right, so, you know, that's... So his article, like I said, it's on the Wizard site. He goes through a lot more as far as lessons for each set and stuff, and really,
I'm glad he does that.
Yeah. Let's face it, okay? He's like, highlights... Well, you kind of peruse the highlights. You're like, yeah, we know the highlights, and this is going to be like, you know. I like reading about the lessons because, you know, he's like, some players wanted the schools to be more different than their guild equivalents inside Strixhaven. And, mm-hmm. you know, MDFCs had too much text. I love that. Mm-hmm. Amen. Like, you know.
Yeah. Like, I like with the schools of Strixhaven, Lorehold was fantastic.
Yeah.
Lorehold was so good. I mean, it was so different than Boros. It was like, you know, Boros was like attack, smash, and Lorehold was like, hey, guess what? Graveyard recursion. What? That's red and white? Okay.
So check that article out. It's definitely worthwhile. Let's go into combat. And then realize that it's a good time to hug, not fight. Let's go to main two.
Main phase.
So in our second main here, we're going to talk a little bit about Commander Craft. We want to give you guys like a magic 101 of Commander Craft, which, by the way, was talked about in the survey. Somebody brought that up. Like, you know, we kind of put magic 101 down. And I'm like, I'm not sure exactly where else we could have took that. I kind of want to, you know, if you're listening to this and you did the survey and you sent that to us, feel free to hit us up on the Discord with, like, things you think we should talk about. Because one of the reasons we stopped was we sat around going, well, we covered mana, we covered construction, we covered, you know, limited. You know, so, but we're going to talk a little bit today about Commander and Commander Craft. This is a Commander Craft segment, which, again, I still need to build a bumper for. And I kind of thought it would be kind of cool for us to talk about staples you should have. Because really there are certain cards that are in every commander deck that you belong there. Now, whether you get these from a precon, which you can, some of this stuff is in precons, like you'll always get a Soul Ring in a precon. You'll always get now the Signet in a precon.
Not always.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah.
Not always.
Not the Signet, the one I'm talking about there, the one that does, all
the Arcane Signet?
Yeah, Arcane Signet.
That's not always there either.
Oh, really?
No. I mean, they've started putting it in, but yeah. It's not... The only one you're basically guaranteed to get is Soul Ring.
Right. So...
Which is fine.
Yeah. So, we're going to talk about Mana Rocks. We're going to talk a little bit about lands. I mean, obviously... And we're going to talk about it from a budgetary perspective. Obviously, if you have the means to get real original duels, you know, if you have $1,600 lying around per card... More power to you. But we're going to go at this from a different angle. Talk a little bit about the spells by color that are kind of, you know, almost an auto-include. We'll try to keep it relatively... I don't think there'll be a card in this that's over 100. We're not going to talk about Mana Crypt or anything because you know you need Mana Crypt, but you also know it's 150 bucks. So I get it. But let's talk a little bit about, like, Mana Rock. So obviously Soul Ring, but what else would you say, Aramis?
Well, the interesting thing about it is that it really depends on your deck. Okay. It depends on what it needs, how fast it is. I mean, there's some commander decks that run 12 mana rocks, and there's other commander decks that run 2 or maybe 3. It really depends on how you build it. The really beautiful thing of being the beautiful thing, we'll try talking again, about Commander is that you really can customize it, and it still works.
Right.
There's a couple of, I mean, hard and fasts. Yeah, you pretty much want to play Soul Ring. It still doesn't actually go into 100% of your decks, but it basically should go in a lot of decks.
I don't think I've ever played a Commander deck that doesn't have it.
There might be like one or two, you know, a small fraction of the decks out there that don't really care about it. But it never really hurts to have it. So yeah, Soul Ring, the great thing about it is that it's been reprinted so many times that you can get one for like $3. Back in the day, it used to be like a $50, $60, $70 card.
Yeah.
But they've reprinted it into the ground, but it still holds value because everybody wants them for their commander decks.
Right.
So yeah, you definitely want Soul Rings. If you're playing multiple colors, if you're not in a monocolor, yeah, you're probably going to want the Signets from Ravnica. Those are really cheap, a couple of bucks a piece. You may want the Talisman cycle.
Now, those one sec. The Signets, guys, what they are is usually they're two colors based around the guilds where you pay one of any color mana, one colorless mana, to tap this rock for those two colors. So that's how the mana fixing kind of works. It does kind of, you know, speed you up a little bit and let you mana fix.
Yeah, so the Azorius Signet taps for white and blue if you pay right. one. The Rakdos Signet pays for red, black. So it's a 2-mana rock that gives you plus 1 mana. It ramps you slightly, but it's more fixing than anything else.
Right.
Arcane Signet, like Will was mentioning earlier, has become more common. They reprinted it a couple times.
Because of Brawl. They put it in Brawl. That was when it came around. So
when the Brawl decks first came out, that's when they introduced it, but it became a staple basically in Commander because it's a 2-mana rock that taps for one color of whatever's in your Commander's color identity. So if you're playing a 5-color Commander, it's a rock that taps for any color for 2 mana, which is great. The Talisman Cycle, like I was mentioning earlier, those are a little harder to come by because they're from Mirrodin and from Modern Horizons.
Right.
They're colorless artifacts. They tap for a colorless with no penalty, and they cost 2 mana. And you can tap them for one of 2 different colors, and if you do, they deal a damage to you. So they're sort of like the old pain lands from Ice Age or from Apocalypse, but in artifact form. And the biggest reason for that is ramp is very important, especially if you're not playing green. You have to be able to keep up with the Joneses for mana. Commander is the format of big spells.
Yes.
And you want to be able to get your mana on time, and the mana rocks really help you do that. If you want to go for big mana activations, you're looking at Thran Dynamo. It's 4 colorless mana to tap, and it's an artifact that taps for 3 colorless mana. You're looking maybe a Gilded Lotus, Chromatic Orrery is kind of expensive, but yeah.
Well, Chromatic Orrery is expensive, but it's mana fixing in 7 additional.
But it's the hard thing is that you don't want to go too heavy on the mana rocks and that level of it. You want the cheaper ones because the more expensive ones tend to be, you know, you're going from 5 to 8, mm-hmm. which means you're playing really big stuff. Most Commander decks, I feel like, are fine with Sol Ring, Signets, maybe Arcane Signet, maybe a Worn Power Stone. You really don't want to go above 3 mana if you can avoid it, because then at that point, if you're spending that kind of mana in Commander, you want to be casting something that's fairly impactful. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times, mana rocks at that point aren't doing it for you. Again, unless you're playing a deck that has just big, massive, expensive spells.
Right. So, yeah, mana rocks, that's what they are. They're 9 times out of 10, when you hear the term mana rock, it's like an artifact, some other card that taps for mana. So... Mm-hmm. Just so you guys know. But so it does die to things like, you know, a board wipe. Undo Inversion is one of my personal faves. Like, it just...
Right.
All the permanents are gone, including that. But let's kind of move from mana rocks then to lands. When playing a Commander, lands are key. You know, obviously, the more colors you're playing, the more crazy you have to get. We've been pretty lucky in that Wizards for the last, I don't know, since I came back, they've made sure to kind of keep playable dual land. When I say dual, I don't mean the originals. Playable lands that tap for more than one color of mana. They've been pretty good about keeping those in standard, whether they're tap or whether they're something like a shock land or a pain land. Those are auto includes. Here's the thing. If you were not playing when Ravnica... Allegiance and Guild of Ravnica were out, you know, now you kind of have to pay a little bit more. But the first thing I would say is that get yourself, at the very least, all 10 of the Shocklands. Mm-hmm. They're good because they have the type on it that says, you know, what it is. It's like land, swamp, and mountain. So that means some searchable for fetches, that sort of thing. We'll talk about fetches in a minute. But Aramis, what else do you think? Like,
I mean, yeah, the shock lands are, I would say, for most people, the most expensive lands you'll buy.
Right.
A lot of people are already priced out of fetch lands.
Well, the fetches allied are colored, coming down, at least for the enemy
the
colors.
Enemy colored ones are coming down, but the allied colored ones are going way, way up. Polluted deltas are going crazy. They're almost as high as Scalding Tarns used to be.
Jesus.
So hopefully they get reprinted soon, but I'm going to exclude fetch lands from the conversation for now because those are generally towards the last card you're going to buy for a deck. If you're looking for a budget, fetch lands really aren't it. Even now, still, they're still $25, $30 a pop. That's a lot. The shock lands are getting there too. But that's because, again, they rotated out of standard a little while ago. But they're still fairly easy to come by because they've been open in such quantities. So if you can get yourself some shock lands, that's great. You might want to try the Czech lands from Ixalan and from Innistrad and Dominaria.
And I think those are also lands in Amonkhet.
No, those are something else.
Oh, okay.
Those are cycle lands.
Yeah.
So the Czech lands, basically, they're lands that come into play tapped unless you control another basic land type, a card of another basic relevant basic land type. So,
or two or fewer. They had count lands too, didn't they?
But those are like Tangle lands.
Okay.
They have all sorts of different names, but these are the ones like the Drowned Catacombs. Came into play tapped, unless you controlled a swamp or an island. So if you already have a swamp or island in play, they come into play untapped. They don't have basic land types, but they also don't have a penalty for tapping for the colored mana like some of them do.
Right.
Like the shock lands, you have to pay 2 life to have them come in untapped. The Tangle lands, like you're talking about, or maybe they're fast lands. I think they're called fast lands.
Yeah, because you want
the fast lands are lands that if you have two or fewer other lands when you play them, they come into play untapped.
Much like Lair of the Hydra right now. That's kind of a sort of.
So a lot of these lands have little gimmicks if you want them untapped or if you want to tap them for colored mana. Obviously, like Benson said, if you have the riches and or spare children to sell. The original dual lands are the best of the best, and there's a reason that you haven't seen them. Part of it's the reserve list, but the other part is because they're just that good. Shock lands are your next best bet. If you happen to have fetches, that's the biggest reason to run the shock lands, is because you can fetch them. Otherwise, really, just you want to make sure that you have enough mix of lands that tap for the colors you need so that you're never missing on a land drop.
And that come in untapped. That's the key. That's, you do not want to be a turn behind.
True. I mean, it's not the end of the world, but yeah, you want to prioritize ones that have some method of coming in untapped. So as good as the Triomes are, if you're playing three or more colors, those are very good. They're also fetchable, but there's no way to get them untapped unless you have like an Amulet of Vigor or something crazy like that. A good mana base is a start. They've gotten better with the pre-cons with their land bases.
Yeah, they had the semi-fetches in this last set, didn't they?
Yeah, they had like the slow fetches.
Yeah, that's it.
Where the lands came in tapped. You didn't have to pay life to get them. And then the fetches themselves came in tapped. So you had to wait like 2 turns to use them. But they're still fetches, sort of.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's budget options for a lot of that stuff. If you have the budget for fetches and shocks, go for it.
Yeah.
If you have,
I'm gonna go a step further. If it's a choice between one of the cards we're gonna talk about next or lands, a shock land, get the shock land. Like, you will never be unhappy with shock lands, because not only for Commander but Modern and almost every other format other than Standard, those are played. And I used to say this to our students. So did you all the time. Spend your money on shock lands. Just get the shocks.
Get your mana base first. You can pick up the other cards later. You're always going to use the lands.
Yeah, you can always find another spell that does something similar to what you're looking to do. But yeah, lands is kind of, it's really, that's Magic 101. But then moving on, let's go around the color wheel. Because there are certain spells you should have again, these are not auto-includes automatically. Some of them, certainly, if you can jam it in, then you're probably going to try. It's probably good to try. Like, for white, the thing that stands up to me there is Smothering Tithe.
Like, that's $40.
Yeah, it's a $40 card, but there's a reason it's a $40 card.
Because they never reprinted it.
Smothering Tithe is an incredible card as far as value and getting you mana.
It's part of the problem is that it's white ramp, and there's not a ton of options out there. This is one of the better ones, because everybody in Commander is drawing a million cards,
right?
And there's typically three opponents, so if nobody pays, you're getting three extra mana a turn. It's really, really good. They've only ever printed it once. I think that's part of the reason why it's so high. It desperately needs a reprint.
It'll get a reprint, though. It'll show up in a Commander set at some point, I think.
I hope it does, because it really... There's no reason that card needs to be $30 or more. So it needs it. I mean, it's a staple, and pretty much if you're playing mostly white, you're gonna have that in there. It should go into pretty much any deck that's playing white.
Right, because it's a one white and three colorless. So
yeah, and it ramps you. So why wouldn't you want ramp?
Exactly. Other spells that, you know, obviously Wraths are whatever flavor you want to roll. I'm a big fan of Cleansing Nova because it can also hit enchantments and artifacts or creatures. It doesn't hit them all. You know, but then there's also like the one and done removal. Swords to Plowshares.
Swords to Plowshares. Path to Exile, yeah. You know? You want that. You want Generous Gift.
Yes.
The pinpoint removal is one of White's strengths,
only,
I guess. Yeah. It has the most efficient removal spells in the game.
Yeah.
But you can't get better than one mana. I mean, even Pact of Slaughter, you have to pay for it the next turn, you have to pay three. But, you know, one mana to exile a creature, sure, they gain some life, or sure, they get a land. But if it's a big enough problem, you'll happily pay that drawback to get rid of the thing.
Right.
I mean, even if it's just to say, you know what, I'm just going to make you pay two more for your commander next turn.
Right. And that's just it. So some of the white is removal. White is, you know, and let's be honest. White is kind of, it hasn't gotten a lot of love in quite some time.
Yeah, there have been a couple of good cards that have come out. Esper Sentinel is quickly becoming a staple in white decks because it's extra card draw.
Right.
So that's really good. If you're going to stretch your budget a little more and go for the more expensive stuff, if you can get your hands on a land tax, that would be nice.
Teferi's Protection is always good.
Teferi's Protection is always really good.
And you can get that cheap because it was in Strixhaven. So,
But it's still, even then, it's still like $20.
Is it really? Okay.
Yeah.
It's like spot removal, wipes, and like I said, Smothering Tide. In blue gets a little interesting.
Blue is insane.
Yeah, because obviously, the first thing I'm going to think of is Rhystic Study. Almost every blue, if you're playing blue, almost everyone plays it because, again, it's not so much ramp. Now it's card draw.
Yeah, but that's also another very expensive card.
Yeah. An expensive uncommon.
Common.
Common?
Common.
Damn.
$32 for a common. You know how many of those things I had lying around when I was making... I opened so many packs of Prophecy. I used to work at McDonald's at Latham Circle Mall the summer of 2000. And I would stop at the card store every day before my shift and buy a couple packs of Prophecy. I had probably 25 or 30 Rhystic Studies.
It's still a great story how I got that. You know, we were at the place and Flights gave us all, you know, a bunch of cards for the students. But of course, you know, everybody was taking from it and putting cards in and stuff. And I was leaving the job and I was handing all the cards off to Nick. And I'm like, well, let me look through this box real quick and just make sure. And I'm going through the box. I'm like, Rhystic Study? Oh, hell. No, that's mine. That's mine. No, no, no. Yeah. I was like, yeah, yeah. Listen, that card is insane. It's great. It's kind of fun just to be like asking, you going to pay for Rhystic Study? Going to pay for that?
You going to pay for Rhystic Study? Do you pay the one? 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 Do you pay the one?
Otherwise, I mean, blue is obviously you're going to want to run Counterspell. You're obviously going to want to run...
Well, it depends on how heavy into blue you are.
Yeah. Like, well, what would you say would be some staples for blue?
I mean, it really depends. I mean, blue... Here's the problem with blue.
Blue's like Swiss Army Knife.
It's so good at everything. I mean, green is really creeping into that space. But blue has always traditionally been the strongest color. And in Commander especially, because you can go all the way back.
Right.
And if you can get your paws on an Ancestral Recall, there you go.
Yeah.
But
Cyclonic Rift is a great card.
Cyclonic Rift is a great card. Another expensive card.
Yeah.
It's expensive again. That's another problem, too. A lot of blue staples are kind of expensive. Counterspell's a really good one. I mean, simple stuff. Arcane Denial can be really good depending on the situation.
Fierce Guardianship, but you're going to pay for that.
That's more than expensive than Precon.
If you can find the Precon with Fierce Guardianship in it, you buy that. It was in the Commander
Legends,
right?
Yeah. If you could find it at MSRP.
Yeah, true.
But, yeah, blue, I mean, you're going to want that. I mean, let me see here. happen to have EDH Rec open. Yeah, Cyclonic Rift is like one of the top card decks to study. Brainstorm is really good.
Oh, Brainstorm. I can't believe I didn't think about that. Yeah.
If you want to spend a little more money, Mystical Tutor.
Yes.
Ponder is really good. Mystic Remora. Windfall. I mean, there's yep, Preordain's on there. Like you said, Fierce Guardianship. That's $48.
Jesus.
I mean, yeah. Geez, like, if you got $60 to spare, Mana Drain is just basically game over.
Right. So here's the, you know, so that's kind of blue is kind of that. White and blue together, the only one I can give you, Thurferi, just because it shuts off Cascade and it pissed off Erebus that one. No.
You want to play, if you're playing white blue with the idea of playing control, you want to play Grand Arbiter Augustus the Fourth.
Yes.
And then your friends will hate you and they will never play Commander with you again.
Exactly. So in black is kind of the tutors, is gonna be the first thing I would tell you. Is diabolic, D-tunes. Vampiric, demonic, any of the tutors. Like, you know.
They all tend to be fairly expensive.
Yes.
I mean, Demonic Tutor, even though it was reprinted in the Mystical Archives, is still $43.
Right.
Vampiric Tutor is $50. So.
Yeah. Even from Core 21, which, Kyle, you should have one.
Well, Vampiric Tutor is from Commander Legends. You're talking about Grim Tutor.
Yeah.
And I think even Grim Tutor, I think, is up there.
As far as just general black cards, that
is pretty it, $15-16.
That's also, I mean, as far as staples go, the tutors are it. I mean, now black is going to be whatever you're playing. Yeah. If you're playing Sack, Rankle, if you're, you know, there are plenty of cards out there that are staples for the type of deck you're playing.
Phyrexian Arena is very good for black. You have you start with 40 life, so it's drawing a card, losing a life every upkeep, you're like, whatever, I don't care. Toxic Deluge is really good. Bolas is, you have to be heavy black to pull that off. But yeah, if you're like mono black or mostly black, Bolas is Citadel. You can run away with the game very quickly with that. Dark Ritual is very good.
Yes.
In that respect. So, like you were saying, any of the tutors are really good. If you're playing a heavy sacrifice deck, Blood Artist is a lot of synergies with that. Read the Bones for cheap card draw.
And again, they also have a lot of spot removal. Murder, Eliminate.
Doomblade.
Yeah, all this stuff. So,
Yeah. A good selection of Wraths as well. But yeah, black is the color of tutors. Black is the color that you get the card that you want when you want it. They tend, again, they're a little more expensive. Grim Tutors are cheap, so they're a lot as far as the really good ones. You don't really want to spend. The problem with tutors is that you're spending mana to do nothing until you do the thing.
Right.
So you have to make sure what you're searching for is worth it. And paying 3 mana and 3 life right on the edge of being good enough.
Yeah.
I mean, Diabolic Tutor, 4 mana is almost too much. But if you have no other options, it's fine. It still does the job.
And that's just it. It's remember, too, okay? A friend of mine told me when I was first learning this, they're like, you're not going to tutor unless you know before you play that card what you're going to get. Don't just go looking through you should know your deck well enough to go, what card do I need to finish this game? You know, to get me in a position to win or to flat out finish this game. Because, you know, I've seen it too. Some people like tutor stuff and they, you know, they'll tutor something crazy because they don't necessarily understand how the synergy of their deck works. Learn your deck. Nothing beats that. So let's move on to red. Red's an interesting commander color. I mean, you've got direct damage. You've got, you know, the one thing I like about red and commander is, destroying artifacts and enchantments. Or artifacts, not enchantments. I mean, they can do things like shatter. They can do things like, you know, that sort of stuff. But then again, hitting you in the face with things. Lightning Bolt. Lightning Bolt's a nice, cheap one drop that does 3 damage. Anything with Storm.
Well, you have, I mean, again, it's like the thing about it, too, is with certain cards, you have to really build around that strategy. My favorite red card is Chaos Warp.
I was going to say Chaos Warp.
It's in a lot of the pre-cons. It's been reprinted a bunch of times. It's $2. And It shuffles a permanent into their library, and then they flip over the top card. And if that card's a permanent, they put it into play. It works with their commander, so you can make them spin the wheel in that respect.
Right.
Speaking of wheels, Wheel of Fortune is great, but it's also it's like $100, so or $200. How much? Right. How much is Wheel of Fortune?
Many dollars.
I mean,
there's other Wheels of Misfortune and Wheel of this. You know, there are different types of wheels. So.
Cheapest Wheel of Fortune is from Revised, and it's $400. Yeah. So yeah, if you got the budget for a wheel,
go buy a dual land. Jesus Christ, what the hell are you doing? Don't waste your time.
You still can't get a dual land for $400.
Right. But
back in the day.
Best colorless.
Oh wait, no. Well, no, never mind. It's $70. Never mind. Oh,
okay.
I was gonna say Dockside Extortionist, but yeah.
Yeah, Dockside's a good card. The next thing is colorless.
What about green?
Oh, sorry, green. Yeah, fuck green. Green. Here's the thing. Green, your staple is all of it.
Everything.
Yeah. If you're playing green, you want all of the green. Obviously, Cultivate.
Cultivate, green. Kodama's Reach.
Yeah, Kodama's Reach. Anything that's going to ramp you. And yeah, it's auto-include.
Cultivate, Kodama's Reach, Rampant Growth, Beast Within. Those four cards should always be in your deck.
Yes.
I mean... maybe Farseek, depending on what other colors you're playing. If you're only playing mono green, you don't care. Sakura Tribelder, yes. Eternal Witness, yes. Llanowar Elves, probably. Yes. Birds of Paradise, probably. I mean, it's Heroic Intervention, Reclamation Sage. I mean, all of these cards are really, really good. And a lot of them are cheap. These are all cheap cards. Birds of Paradise. Seaborn Muse,
automatic. I know it's two. I know it's two flower green. But if you can get it out on the battlefield... there's nothing like the untapping at every
There's nothing upkeep. Like being made the target.
Yeah, true.
Seaborn Muse will do that. If you happen to be lucky enough to get the Commander Collection greens and got your hands on a Sylvan Library,
yes,
that is an incredible card in Commander because half the time you're not putting those cards back.
No.
You're like, I'll draw three cards every turn. Sure, what's eight life? I don't mind.
Exactly. So
green has got lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of good stuff, especially combined with other colors.
Exactly. So, and you know, obviously, when we're dealing with multiple colored cards, that's all going to be on what you're doing. I mean, if I'm thinking about a multiple color staple, it's hard to say because it's a matter of
if your black white Anguished Unmaking is really good. Exile target non-land permanent. You lose three life. Okay, that's pretty fair for three mana instant speed. Just kill something. Sure. Rather unconditional.
Yeah. Yeah.
Terminate. Putrefy. Despark. Yes. Mortify. All these unconditional.
Spot removals. Yeah.
Yeah. Unconditional spot removals. I mean, you know, Merciless Eviction. If you want to go with the Wraths. Supreme Verdict. Mirari's Wake. Although that, no, that's not that.
I think Mirari's Wake is an auto. Yeah. Everybody likes that.
Yeah. I mean, green and white, you're probably going to want to include it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just Abrupt Decay. If you're playing Simic colors, Tatiova should be in there because she's disgusting.
Yeah. If you're playing Slivers.
Well, if you're playing Slivers, here's the thing. If you're playing Slivers, you play all the cards we just mentioned anyway.
Yeah, and all the colors. But yeah, and then when we get to like colorless and artifacts, obviously we already went over the mana rocks. It depends on what your deck wants to do. Like, I wouldn't necessarily jam Ugin into every deck, you know, because sometimes it's just not, I mean, it's a great card, but, you know.
You might want Lightning Greaves and Swiftfoot Boots.
Lightning Greaves, Swiftfoot Boots. Yeah, equipment is...
Depending on how many creatures you're running, maybe some of the swords. Like Feast and Famine. Feast or Famine is usually the one that people play. Body and Mind.
Fire and Ice.
I mean, it doesn't see as much play as others. I mean, they all have decent effects. Sword of Hearth and Home is really good.
Yeah. I'm picking that up tomorrow.
But, it all depends, like, because there are some commander decks out there that don't play a ton of creatures, and yes, you only need one creature to be able to equip it, but it's a little harder once you get into the artifacts, like which ones you want to play. Like if you're playing Stax, maybe you're playing Winter Orb,
right?
You know, maybe you're playing Smokestack, although that's pretty expensive. I think that's reserve list. But yeah, most of the artifacts you're going to be playing are going to be mana rocks. You're going to have some utility stuff in there, but those are going to generally be tuned toward whatever deck you're doing. So like if you're casting a bunch of spells or it's a Life Matters deck, maybe you're playing Aetherflux Reservoir.
Right. I do like the Cursed Totem.
Cursed Totem is well, that's more of a hate card.
Yeah.
if you're playing Tribal, you might want to be playing like
Vanquisher's Banner.
Maybe Vanquisher's Banner, Coat of Arms. Yeah. There's the one from the core set, Ancestry, something of Ancestry. Icon of Ancestry.
Yeah, Icon of Ancestry.
That gives your guys +1/+1, and you can sort of dig through your deck a little bit. So
yeah, it depends on what you're doing. But, I mean, those are kind of... And when it comes to a commander, here's the thing, guys. You play what you want. I'm not going to give you a staple of that. I mean, there are a few out there. You know, a beginner commander, I would stick with a single color if you can. Maybe two. I wouldn't go above that. You know, but yeah.
I mean, the most popular commander, top five commanders in EDH Rec over the past 2 years is Golos, Korvold, Kenrith, Atraxa, and Yuriko.
Atraxa.
So you got 2 5 color decks, Sacrifice, and Atraxa Nonsense, yeah. And Ninjutsu.
Yes. So, but that's kind of where we wanted to go with that. We're running a little over, so I'm going to bail on the survey. We'll kind of reserve that for another day. Let's talk about the winner box real quick. We are almost down to it. We have had everyone has we've gotten to one of the finalists is already in. So Jay Groh has made it to the finals, and he's waiting for the winner of JVA versus D Spoons, and then the winner of whoever wins that playing HP Wizard. So we're getting down to it. Now, we have videos. They have been sending them to me. I've been saving them. I've been trying to keep track of them. I might have lost one or two in mail. I'll go looking tomorrow. So we'll put together another show because I thought that was kind of fun doing the color commentary. Maybe it'll be this Friday. I don't know. But, you know, if you're still in, JVA, D-Spoons, HP Wizard, J-Gro, guys, send us your videos when you play. Believe it or not, it is kind of cool. So... best of luck. And when we're done with that, Aramis and I were kind of talking offline. The thinking is we're going to try to roll right into Crimson Dawn. Is that the one next or what's next?
Midnight Hunt.
Yeah. We're going to roll into Midnight Hunt. The format for this, we're thinking if Wizards can get it coded, we'd really like to do a 100 card historic brawl. So... It's okay, Kyle. Get it. I think I have it already because I think. Who did you play? Apple Freak might have sent it to me. Here's the deal. All right, we're thinking 100 card historic brawl if we can. You know, pretty much wide open. Jumpstart Historic is going to be released by then, so the hope is that there'll be enough historic cards to make it interesting. If they can't make it so we can challenge in 100 card historic brawl, we're not going to do 60 because I don't know. It just feels kind of stupid. We'll probably do a historic best of three traditional or something. So, you know, I don't know that we've ever done historic regular. I think we've always done historic artisan. So this could be interesting. But that's kind of the thinking on that. The winner box is going forward. So be ready. Don't leave our Discord because obviously we use that. But other than that, and then the other big news that we wanted to talk about is, Arena's got a big update this week. So Jumpstart Horizons is going to launch, I think, this week, as well as a whole bunch of other stuff. So be watching Arena. But is there anything else you could think of, Aramis?
No, that pretty much is everything.
Yeah, so let's get into it then.
End stuff.
All right, so we have a Twitch channel. We want to remind you, first of all, as we're rolling up our playmats, putting our cards in the boxes, and taking our pizza boxes over the trash, because darn it, your mother still does not work at this Virgin Mobile store, that we have a Twitch channel where we stream all sorts of content. Look up the Planeswalkers Podcast on Twitch. There you'll see all the shows we do on both Magic as well as other geeky games. Both of our weekly streams are there. So, and also feel free to follow me on Twitch. I'm at MindCrime73. And I try to stream there pretty regularly if I can.
you'd rather interact with us in a more real-time fashion, you can hop on our Discord. It's been very active, especially during the Winterbox tournaments. Like Will said, we're hoping to get the next one started off pretty soon because this set's going to be on us before we know it. So if you want to join our Discord, it's discord.planestalkerspodcast.com. Again, very active community. Lots of folks there, very friendly. They love to chat it up. If Twitter is more your speed, you can find our show at planestalkerpod on Twitter.
And I have a personal Twitter. It's at WR Benson. I don't tweet there very much. I just tend to follow weird and crazy stuff. But of course, you can always follow us on Facebook as well. Just go to facebook.com/planestalker. There's no S at the end, mainly because some airplane enthusiasts thought that people would want to hang out with him. So like and follow our page there. Don't forget as well, we do have our Commander Craft Playcast this Wednesday. We're playing Paper Commander live. I am probably going to either play my Sir Gwyn deck, or I may play my updated Slivers. But I know that Jagro is probably going to play, or Grunt, not Jagro. Grunt probably is playing his Niv-Mizzet. So Apollo's going to be joining us, and Aramis is going to be playing. Do you know what you're playing yet?
I don't know what I'm playing yet, no.
Okay. So definitely tune in on that. It's around 7 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesdays. You know, it's on all of our channels, and we'd love to have you there.
And finally, if you want to send the show an email, there's three places you can send the email to. You can send us an email, a question about the show, a suggestion for a topic, maybe a cool story you want to share with the show, because we'll read it on air.
We read everything on air.
Even the bad ones.
Yes, especially the bad ones. I love reading the bad ones.
But anyway, the main email address for the podcast is podcast@planestalkerspodcast.com. If you want to email Will directly, his email address is will@planestalkerspodcast.com. If you'd like to email me directly, my email is aramis@planestalkerspodcast.com.
All right, and so on that note, we want to thank you guys for listening and hanging out with us tonight. Sorry we went a little over, but we will be back on Wednesday with Commander Craft and back next Monday for our big for the big show where we'll be doing some of our previews. And maybe Friday night. I don't know. We haven't decided yet for commentary. Be looking on your feeds for that. Don't forget, Cantrip Cartel, our sister show. They drop usually on Thursdays. But for Aramis Perez, this is Will Benson saying thank you for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. And we want to remind you to keep some of your mana untapped because you never know when you need it. Take care and have a great week. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.